Michael Veach is Associate Curator of Special Collections at the Filson Historical Society. And Michael, you are the only professional bourbon historian in the country.
That's what they tell me, but I think that's going to be changing here in the near future. We have a lady who is working on her doctorate degree in food studies at New York University, looking at the evolution of bourbon's image. So, you know, she will definitely qualify, in my opinion, as a second one.
Now, you have written Kentucky Bourbon Whiskey, an American Heritage.
That's correct.
And your mission in writing this book was?
There has never really been a good summary explanation, description, however you want to put it, of the bourbon industry and bourbon whiskey and how it came from, you know, point A to point B. Point A being the late 18th century with the Whiskey Rebellion, and point B being the 21st century that we are now today. And the purpose was kind of just to do that general summary of the industry in bourbon and how it came about.
Now, you apparently are looking at some aspects of the bourbon business that have been largely ignored. Would you tell me about those aspects now?
Oh, there's so many of them. When I first got into the bourbon history, when I was an archivist at United Distillers, and I went to look to find written sources on bourbon history, there were just so few out there. The history as a whole has been ignored for the most part. You know, when you look at the American history, you know, the first constitutional crisis was the Whiskey Rebellion. And you move forward from that, you know, if you're looking at the evolution of American industry, you know, nothing serves as a better example than the whiskey industry. It started off as a cottage industry with farmer distillers and then moved into the big distilleries that we know today with the improvement on technology, with steam power and the invention of the column still and everything else. Then when you look at the evolution in marketing, you know, bourbon was first marketed in the early 19th century, you know, it was sold primarily in the barrel. You know, through most of the 19th century, the barrel was the primary package. And it's only by the end of the century that you start getting bottled bourbons and such. There are just many aspects of the industry as a whole that need to be clarified more.
I didn't know that Old Forester was the first bourbon to be sold only by the bottle.
Yes, that was one of the major turning points, so to speak. When George Garvin Brown was working for Henry Chambers as a pharmaceutical salesman in the 1860s and 70s, early 70s, he was selling whiskey because, you know, there weren't that many pharmaceuticals out there, really. And doctors were complaining about the quality of the whiskey. It may be good one day and bad the next. And, of course, this is from the nature of the way whiskey was sold at that time in the barrel. Every barrel is different. You know, it's just the nature of the beast, so to speak. Every barrel is going to create slightly different flavor profiles and such. So in order to get a consistent flavor, he thought the best way to do it was to get several barrels together, vat it all together to create a flavor profile that you liked, and then bottle it. So he went to Chambers and said, yeah, I would like to do this. And Chambers says, good idea, but I'm not going to do it because I'm too old. But if you'll raise some money, I'll raise some money for you as well, and we'll put you into business. And that's when him and his older brother J.T.S. Brown got together, raised the money, and they created the Old Forester brand and sold it only by the bottle.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
In Kentucky, who might have been the first distiller to move into industrial production of whiskey?
That's really hard to say. in the 18 teens, there were some businessmen that came down from Massachusetts, and they set up a distillery here in Louisville called the Hope Distillery. It was a huge affair, making, you know, a lot of whiskey in a day, but it only lasted a few years before it went bankrupt and disappeared. But if you're talking about large-scale industrial production, I would have to say they would probably be the first.
Interesting. I've never heard of that distillery.
Well, like I said, they were only around for about 3-4 years, and then they went bankrupt. But there is a nice description of the distillery in the Memorial History of Louisville for people that want to find out more about it.
Now, you mentioned in the press release about your new book, Kentucky Bourbon Whiskey and American Heritage, that you explore the effects of the Pure Food and Drug Act.
Right. The Pure Food and Drug Act was inspired basically by the muckrakers, you know, the people exposing all of the horrors and such they found in the packing industry and other food industries. And when it passed in 1906, the first real big question was, what is whiskey? You know, it sounds like a simple question, but it wasn't. You know, was whiskey just a straight whiskey there where the distiller makes it and ages it and, you know, sells it that way? Or was it something that one of these rectifying companies were making, which could involve mixing aged whiskey with neutral spirits and other flavoring ingredients? Or was it even something that there were recipes out there for people that would make an old bourbon and not use any aged bourbon at all, just using neutral spirits and flavor components? The whole controversy comes out when the chemist for the Agriculture Department under Teddy Roosevelt, a guy named Wiley, said that only straight whiskey was whiskey, and everything else had to be labeled imitation. Needless to say, that upset a lot of people, not only American rectifiers, but also the Scotch whiskey importers and the Canadian whiskey importers, because every bit of whiskey that they were sending into the United States at that time would have to be labeled imitation whiskey, because it was what we would consider a blended whiskey. It goes into the court system and is in the court system until finally Roosevelt leaves office and William Howard Taft becomes president. And Taft, being from a judicial background, knew that since these regulations were all coming out of his cabinet, the new Food and Drug Administration and the Agricultural Department, the ultimate decision was his. So he spent the first 9 months of office listening to both sides of the argument and came up with what is known as the Taft decision. And I always tell people it has to be the right decision because nobody liked it. You know, the straight whiskey people didn't think he went far enough. The rectified people thought he went too far. But the fact is he ended up defining what we know today as straight whiskey, blended whiskey, and imitation whiskey.
I've never heard of imitation whiskey.
Well, there's still an example of it out there now, but they've even gotten away from calling it whiskey, and that's Southern Comfort.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, and they're calling it a whiskey-based liqueur now, you know, but that's basically the type of product that an imitation whiskey would be. Something that made to taste like whiskey, but contains little or no whiskey in it at all.
Well, listen, I understand that you've had access to the personal papers of all of the leading families involved in this industry in Kentucky. How did you get that access?
Well, I won't say all of the leading families. I've had access to the papers that are part of the United Distillers Archives when I was archivist there for 5 years in the early to mid-90s. So I got to see all of the papers from companies like Stitzel Weller and Glenmore and Shin Lee working at the archives there. And then here at the Filson, we managed to get a hold of the papers of the Taylor Hay family, which is Colonel E.H. Taylor of old Taylor fame. Most of it just comes from my position of working as an archivist here in Kentucky.
Fascinating, huh?
Yes.
Well, I wish you well on your book, and I thank you for talking with me today. Again, we're talking with Michael Veach, who has just written, and the University Press of Kentucky has published Kentucky Bourbon Whiskey and American Heritage.
Thank you for having me.